it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
And welcome to another edition of the Hockey News on the Cue. My name is Will McLaren. His name is Jamie Tozer. We're happy to bring you all of the news highlights and newsmakers that are prevalent in the QMJHL for this week. And Jamie, let's start off with you. Question number one, where were you last week? And number two, how did it go? Because I don't think you were within the realm of the Cue, were you?
Yeah, we were leapfrogging to the WHL podcast territory a little bit. Flew out to Saskatchewan to see a few games. Went to Moose Jaw, Swift Current, in Regina. At least made an appearance in Regina. Didn't end up seeing a game because of some bad weather, which was very unfortunate and a little painful for me. But I have a new appreciation, Will, for the fall weather on the East Coast after a pretty treacherous 5-minute drive to the airport on Monday. So I'm happy to be back. Happy to be back to 20-degree weather here in the New Brunswick, Nova Scotia area.
Yeah, we'll take the unseasonable warmth for sure. And exactly. It is good to get you back. You still get to see the acclaimed Mr. Bedard at least one occasion, maybe two, if I'm not mistaken.
Some once. Didn't get to see him a second time, but I think a game the Pats would probably like to forget. I think that was probably one of their worst games of the season. Moose Jaw really gave it to them, especially in the first period. Would have liked to have seen a rematch on Sunday, but unfortunately that didn't happen. But, you know, watching that game, you know, it's kind of crazy to you know, see the Moose Jaw Warriors mentality going into that game, knowing that you're probably going to have to score three or more goals to have a shot at winning the game when you're going against a guy who's averaging two or more points a game. Like, that's got to be a really challenging mentality to go into that game knowing that you're kind of already down 2-0 before the game even starts. So I'm sure that's a huge challenge for those teams out there.
Yeah, no, we saw it in the Cue almost two decades ago with Sidney Crosby. Mm-hmm. It was much the same idea. I mean, not only were you getting packed houses, but you were just getting amped up opponents night after night after night. Yep. So when you think about it, you know, what Connor Bedard's doing in Regina and what Crosby did back in the day in Rimouski, for them to put up the numbers that they did and the performances they did, it's, you know, even more impressive knowing that much attention and spotlight's on you. So we'll look forward to hearing about part two of the Western journey once you get out to Regina. For those who don't know, Jamie is on the verge of visiting all 60 CHL arenas. So certainly a rare feat that I'm looking forward to following along already. I can't wait to see how the end of this journey goes. It's 54 out of 60 or 53 out of 60?
53, I believe, of 60 right now. I'm not sure when the journey will end now, given this Regina hiccup, but we'll see. We'll attempt it this season, but if it doesn't happen until next fall, that's just the way it goes.
All right. We'll keep an eye on you, Jamie, but for now, let's keep an eye on the Cue as well, and we'll start with some news from last week. Of course, the topic of sexual harassment, of abuse, of scandal, you know, it's been very prevalent, not just in the Cue per se. There's been incidents, but you know, throughout junior hockey all the way up to the NHL. And in part because of this, QMJHL has actually started a series of consent awareness workshops. They're being hosted by a woman by the name of Leah Clermont-Dion. She's a producer. She's an author. She's also a political scientist. And she has her own very interesting stories to tell about her different experiences. And she ended up actually taking those experiences and those of others and creating a documentary recently. It was a French documentary called T'as juste à porter plainte, also known as You Just Have to Complain in rough English translation. And that's actually part of this coursework that coaches and teams throughout the players throughout the QMJHL are currently embarking on. So, we both know, Jamie, the hockey landscape is not perfect, and it's going to take a very long time until it gets to a point where people feel safe, but certainly commendable by the QMJHL to take this step in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously an issue much bigger and more important than hockey. But great to see the league. It really feels like the league is kind of being a leader in this space so far. And maybe it's just because we follow this league more than other junior leagues, but it really seems like the Q has taken a big step into ensuring their players and their staff are taught courses and education like this. And a variety of different topics and all areas of inclusiveness, really. So it's great to see the league really taking a big step. And hopefully this is a first step to solving a big problem for the sport.
Yeah, definitely. They say actions speak louder than words. So here is some action. Hopefully the follow-up with it is just a better league to play in and a better league to follow as well. We will, as that program continues its rollout, be very eager to see how things take shape, what the end results are, which may take time, as things sometimes do. But again, certainly a feather in the cap of the QMJHL to reach out to the right people and to get things going on the right foot towards. Just a better experience for everybody. Moving on to the on-ice side of things, and let's talk about a couple of teams on opposite sides geographically, opposite sides conference-wise, but both very animalistic. We're talking about cats and dogs, and we'll start with the cats. And I know, Jamie, you're just down the road from this team in St. John most of the time. You're hanging around TV station a lot, so I don't know how much you really want to spend time talking about the Moncton Wildcats, but they certainly deserve some praise for what they've done. A team that we knew was going to be on the rise this year. We didn't know to what degree, and we didn't know exactly when they gained some traction. Scoring goals was difficult for them last year, but all of a sudden they've got points in their last six games at 5-0-0-1, scoring up and down the lineup. Vincent Fillion's kind of having his coming out party this year. He's 5-2 so far this year, and a career high so far in goals against average and save percentage. And Etienne Morin, 17-year-old defenseman, who's really, he stepped into the number one position last year in a lot of respects as a 16-year-old. There's no doubt he's the number one guy in the back end of Moncton, point of game guy. He's a 2023 NHL eligible draft pick. And your thoughts on what's going on up the highway from you.
Well, I think the first guy you mentioned, Vincent Fillion, I think he's been kind of the biggest story for me, because I think a lot of attention was on him going into the season. And I think he kind of had the opportunity last year to really take that number one role if he was able to take it. And he just wasn't quite able to take that step that we all kind of expected him to take last season. Kind of slid more into a platoon role, and that kind of led to a lot of offseason questions about whether Moncton was going to have good enough goaltending to contend this season. And it's early so far, but it looks like he's kind of finding those, or fitting into those expectations that we kind of expected him to fill in his career. So that's good to see that Fillion is really stepping into that role as a, it looks like a quality number one goaltender. And then, Etienne Morin, I mean, those are really, really good numbers for a 17-year-old defenseman. I believe he's averaging a little over a point per game, which is really impressive. And then Yon Losheng, watching him play last weekend against St. John, he was definitely one of the best players on the ice, and he was very, very noticeable. So Moncton looks good. We'll see if they can keep it up. And Will, I mean, we mentioned a little bit last episode, they're playing in a division that's not great. So they're going to be able to pick up a lot of points even if they're just a good team. They don't have to be a great team to pick up a lot of good points this season.
Definitely, Jamie. You know, this year isn't so much the year in Moncton. Mm-hmm. It was just more of a question of, you know, what could we expect at least early on? See if they can get their footing. So far, that's been the case. You know, another couple of key guys that have come up big in that lineup. Max Barbashev. You know, it's his third season now in Moncton. You know, the younger brother of St. Louis Blues Ivan Barbashev, who had a very successful career in Moncton back about a decade or so ago. He attended New York Rangers camp, Max did, this past fall. And talking to Richie Thibault, the general manager in Moncton, here just last week for an article that will appear in the Prospects Unlimited edition of the Hockey News coming out fairly soon. One of the things that Richie points out is just the fact that, you know, this is the guy who stayed in Moncton for 18 months after he arrived. He arrived right in the middle of the pandemic, January 2021. And, you know, he put in the commitment. And it's really paying dividends right now, not just for himself, but for the entire team. And of course, Charles Beaudoin, a guy that both of us got to see a fair amount of in June at the Memorial Cup for the President Cup winning Shawinigan Cataracts. He seems to have fit into the lineup very well. 10 points so far for Beaudoin, playing that strong two-way game that made him very valuable for the Cataracts last season.
Yep, and shout out to Gabe Smith. I don't get to shout out Charlotte County guys too often in the queue, Will. So shout out to Gabe Smith, St. Andrews native.
Very good. Yep, and you know, there's a lot of good hockey played down in that area. Of course, they used to have the Junior A Aces and their ownership group with the Horns, who I get to know well with my time in that league. And you know, a pretty strong senior hockey tradition as well. So now you're right, Jamie, to see players' talent coming from all corners of Quebec and the Maritimes, it's never a bad thing. And now you mentioned the Cats, they were in St. John last week. Well, the Dogs will be in Moncton this week, one of two games for the Wildcats this coming week. They also host the Gatineau Olympique in what should be a pretty interesting matchup, as Gatineau, of course, is off to their own very decent start over in the Western Conference. Speaking of the Western Conference, how about those Rouyn-Noranda Huskies? They are getting closer to the peak of the building process again after winning the Memorial Cup in 2019. They're on a five-game win streak right now, and that includes a 3-for-3 jaunt through the Maritimes. Never an easy thing to do, even though Maritime Division isn't quite maybe as strong as it has been in years past. But a big come-from-behind win in Halifax on Saturday night. I was there. They certainly turned it up a notch and put Halifax on their heels, a very good Halifax team on their heels. And they're doing it with contributions up and down the lineup. And the guy who stood out to me is Bill Zonin. He's leading rookie scorer. He was drafted sixth overall in the 2022 QMJHL draft. He's got 12 points in 13 games. He's not eligible till 2025 for the NHL draft, but when that time comes, you're going to see teams, I feel, knocking on his door.
Yep, Big Bill, right? Big Bill, as he was called non-draft day, I think. Yeah, really good start for the Huskies. I guess a little bit of a slow start, but they've really picked it up over the past little bit. And really, like you mentioned there, Will, really an organization that's kind of perfected the cycle over the past 10, 20 years. So you knew that they were going to start to see that upswing this year and next year. So good to see them back in contention. I, you know, kind of starting to wonder, you know, could they push Gatineau in that West division? That's an intriguing division to me. You know, Val d'Or's still got some pretty good older players. And then the Armada, who I think are off to a little bit of a slower start than they would have liked. And I know losing Patrick Gay to the pro ranks is a big loss for them, but you know, they made some pretty big splashes in the off season. Interesting division and probably good challenge for the Huskies really to play a lot of these teams as they kind of hit the upswing of this rebuild.
Yeah, definitely. And you even look at a team like Val d'Or that's holding their own far better mm-hmm. than probably a lot of people expected. You know, there's rumors already swirling about what they're going to do at the trade period, but it looks like no matter what they do, they've banked a few points early. you know, just a quick point on that Western Conference in general, you know, 8 teams in the conference, 7 of them are 500 or higher. And that's based on win percentage. That's not based on points percentage. That's not taking into account, you know, shootout and overtime losses or anything like that. There's a number of surprisingly solid teams early on. Sometimes you see that where early on in the year, some teams that maybe you didn't expect to see come out too hot, they catch teams by surprise. But, you know, we're not that early into the season now. We're getting close to month number 2. And to see the parity over in the West is certainly surprising and also just very exciting to see.
Yeah, and another team that's really surprised me well in the West, Victoriaville, who missed the playoffs last season, and they're off to 7-4-0-1 start. That's excellent for them. I'm really curious to see kind of how this plays out over the next couple months, just because there's been so much crossover where there's been a lot of West East, and we know that the power is in the West, and we see kind of some lopsided numbers. We've seen the West teams pick up a lot of wins against East opponents, so I'm curious to see kind of how, once things cool down a little bit, and the schedule gets a little bit more normalized, to see who how the standings kind of go from there.
Western Conference is currently 30-12 against the Eastern Conference, Jamie. So, you know, very good point. It'll be interesting to see. And once the holidays roll around, there's a lot more interdivisional matchups. Teams aren't traveling quite as much close to Christmas and New Year's. We'll see how things balance out. But, excellent performances so far out in the Wild West. Now, turning our attention from the Q up to the NHL and our NHL team profile for this week, we're going to the Metropolitan Division, and we're going to Carolina, the Carolina Hurricanes. Nobody on the Hurricanes NHL squad at the moment with QMJHL experience. There was one guy who was a very late cut, and that is defenseman Kevin Fitzgerald. Other than that, nobody in the lineup right now. There's a couple guys in the queue, however, that are drafted players in the QMJHL. We talked about Valdor and Gatineau. Well, that's where the two of them reside, Jamie. One is Justin Robida, center over in Valdor, former number 2 pick in the queue draft. He was selected in the 5th round in 2021 by the Hurricanes. And in that same draft, in that same round, the Hurricanes also selected Gatineau forward Bobby Orr, formerly the Halifax Mooseheads, former 20 goal scorer in Halifax, traded to Gatineau before this season.
Yeah, and you know, Bobby Orr, I think a bit of a surprising trade, a trade that kind of made sense after it kind of settled down a little bit. But I think a move that we didn't really expect to happen during the offseason, to see him get traded to Gatineau and go from a good Halifax team to another good team. So that was a bit of a surprising trade, but we'll see how that one kind of plays out over time. Orr's a phenomenal skater, as we know. Really plays a hard style, really good two-way forward. I'm curious to see if he can kind of get his offensive numbers up a little bit as he's getting older, especially playing on a really good Gatineau team where he should be able to pick up some points. So curious to see what he's kind of capable of offensively this season. And then Robida, I think he's probably the guy that we're all watching to see where he lands at Christmas. That's probably one of the marquee trade targets this season. Captain in Valdor, 30 goal scorer. He's going to be a wanted man.
Yeah, definitely. Son of former QMJHL and NHLer, Stefan Robida. Big seasons so far, helped lead Valdor to a President Cup final in 2021. And note on Bobby Orr, who I want to guess with Orr, he was dealt to Gatineau over a topic that we discussed last week, Jamie, with Louis Robitaille, and that's the injury factor. You know, there's a number of big names between Mannix Landry, Antonin Vero. They received Olivier Nadeau from Shawinigan. He won't be around for the first few months. So just to maintain some modicum of that. That depth, I think the Bobby Orr trade was a pretty smart move from their standpoint. Wherever he lands in the lineup, once that team gets a little bit healthier, for sure he has the potential to produce for them. EHL, we already talked about Kevin Fitzgerald with the Chicago Wolves. Won a Calder Cup with the Wolves last year, as did his teammate and another Q alumni, Vasily Ponomarev, former center for the Chouinard and Cataracts. Kevin Fitzgerald is a guy that always strikes me as interesting. He was never drafted. He was a free agent signing of the Halifax Mooseheads. He had played junior A hockey for the Somerset Western Capitals. Had a very productive career in Halifax, got traded to Shawinigan, I believe, partway through his Q career. Was not drafted in the NHL, signed with Carolina, originally signed with San Jose. And he's just made the most of every opportunity he's had, even though sometimes he hasn't really been given much of an opportunity.
Yeah, that's wild. That's wild that he was never drafted. And there's a guy that we've been talking a lot about this week who's similar story, Arbor Jack guy.
Absolutely.
Similar to that. So it just goes to show you that you work hard. Doesn't matter where you get drafted or if you get drafted at all. If you work hard and you have the talent, you're going to make your way to the top.
Yeah, people will notice you, and well, everybody noticed Arbor Jack guy last week, that's for sure. Zach Cassian being one of them.
But, I think so.
Yes, definitely. And then, of course, another guy that we got to see at the Memorial Cup with the Hamilton Bulldogs, very impressive performance there. One guy of note in the ECHL of Carolina, Norfolk Admirals, Xavier Bouchard, 5-year veteran in the queue between Baikomo, Cape Breton, and Rouyn-Noranda. And originally a Vegas draft pick, but has made his way into the Carolina system. So still a prospect in Carolina. And speaking of prospects, let's talk a little bit about the 2023 draft prospect of the week. We focus on a QMJHLer who is on the radar with NHL Central Scouting. And this week we're going to talk a little bit about another defenseman, another guy who has come up through the ranks in Shawinigan. That's Jordan Tarigny, drafted 9th overall by Shawinigan again in 2021. And Jamie, one of those guys that I always say, you know, he may have been 16, but he kind of played like he was 18. And it showed not only in the regular season, but through the President Cup playoffs, helped Shawinigan win their first title in their 53rd year of operation, yeah. And then helped bring that team to within a goal of reaching the Memorial Cup final. So give us your thoughts on what you've seen of Jordan as well. I mean, you had plenty of opportunity to see him as well in St. John back in June.
Yeah, I mean, really good player. You know, and obviously to win a league championship and go to the Memorial Cup in your rookie season, that's obviously going to be a huge, huge benefit for the rest of his career, really, especially in junior. But similar to what we were mentioning about Morin, I mean, those numbers that he's putting up as a 17-year-old, I mean, when you're averaging like a point a game as a 17-year-old defenseman in the queue, I mean, those are really good numbers. And he's not playing on last year's Shawinigan team now. He's playing on a much different Shawinigan team that doesn't have the firepower. So a phenomenal season for him. Curious to see if he can really rise up the draft rankings, if he can kind of keep this up. But curious to see how he plays defensively, because I think that's probably the big focus for him and a lot of the younger defensemen in the league, to focus on defense. And obviously, as I actually didn't even know this until I saw the show notes, I didn't even realize he was the younger brother of Miguel Tourigny. So yeah. Obviously a guy who knows how to put up some points.
Yeah, definitely. And Miguel, who we know very well from his time in the queue with Blainville and with Bathurst, yep. You know, just an offensively driven defenseman in his own right. But, you know, one thing that struck me with Jordan, talking to Martin Mondeau, the general manager in Shawinigan last year, he made a point. He did not want to deal Jordan Tarigny, almost anybody else potentially on the table. He wanted to keep him for the rebuild, and we're kind of seeing why. And you know, as Daniel Renault and his coaching staff, you know, bring him into that more elevated role, he's not as insulated as he once was. Be very interesting to see, as you mentioned, Jamie, how his game rounds out in the years to come. And Jordan Tourigny as well, named one of the players to watch by AHL Central Scouting. That list came out earlier today. There are 27 QMJHL players on it. We talked about Ethan Gauthier last year. He's the only A-listed prospect in the queue right now. Tourigny is a B-listed prospect, along with Halifax's Matthew Kadafor, Moncton's Etienne Morin, of course, we just discussed, and Mateo Mana, Shikudimi, Tyler Pedaletta, Drummondville as well, and then everybody else is in that C list. Don't know how much time you've had to take a look at that list, Jamie. It did come out fairly recently, but any thoughts on the list in general? Maybe anybody who you thought was maybe a little low, maybe a little high? Any surprises?
Yeah, you know, just overall thoughts. Hate to be the downer, but, you know, not a great year for the Q again this year. Not a huge draft, probably only going to have one, maybe two guys taken in the first round. So, again, not the greatest draft years ahead for the Q, but hopefully that improves in the near future. But one of the guys on the list that I feel like we don't talk a lot about is Tyler Bettle, who, you know, is very, very highly touted in the draft. And, you know, just felt like we didn't kind of went under the radar last season, but off to a good start with Drummondville. Curious to see what type of season he can have here in his draft year. I'm also curious to see what type of player he kind of rounds out to be. Just, you know, give a shout out to the AUS, which I managed to not do last week. Shame on me. You know, I know his father, Brad, I've seen Santa Fex, he's been the head coach of Santa Fex for quite a while now. I've seen them play many, many times, and they're probably one of the hardest working hockey teams I've ever seen. So I'm curious to see if Tyler Pedal plays a similar style to that Santa Fex style of hockey.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the bloodlines are certainly strong with Tyler, and you know, we'll probably go into even greater detail with him as a 2023 eligible prospect down the road here on the Hockey News on the Q. But you know, that's a very good point, Jamie, in that, you know, not very often you can say that about a second overall pick in any draft that maybe flew under the radar a little bit. You know, there was talk that he could easily have gone number one to Cape Breton, and, you know, instead going in that number two slot, or sorry, that number one slot, I should say, in Sherbrooke, I should say, where Ethan Gauthier did wind up going, goes number two to Drummondville, had a very strong start, battled bit of the injury bug, if I'm not mistaken, last year. But just a dynamic player on a Drummondville team that is kind of, you know, mid-level right now. Yeah. He's going to be expected to drive a lot of offense. And so far, he's been equal to the challenge. He's been coming up big when necessary. A couple names that stuck out to me, Justin Gill is one of them. We talked about him last week, center from Sherbrooke. He's a C-level prospect. I'd be curious, given his age, whether or not an AHL team would take a flyer on him. Another guy who he doesn't show up in the scoreboard a lot, but he is usually involved in the play and rather heavily at that. And that's Ty Higgins in Bathurst. Anytime I've seen the Titan play in recent times, last couple of years, Ty has, you know, he's started to earn more and more minutes as time goes on. Obviously, there's a big overhaul in Bathurst as well last year, which was kind of a go for it year for the Titan. They fell in the second round of the playoffs last year. But Higgins is just one of those steady Eddie sort of guys who, even if he doesn't get picked in the NHL draft, he is one guy that I could see pro scouts sort of gravitate towards, quickly snap him up after his draft eligibility is over. So lots to look forward to there. Of course, there will be an update after New Year's, and then final rankings will come out in the spring. We'll keep a close eye and see if anybody, particularly in that B list, is able to shoot up a little bit higher in the rankings and give the Q a better showing at the 2023 NHL Entry Draft. And we talked about Matthew Kadafor being one of those B-level prospects. Well, one of his teammates was a B-level prospect last year. He ended up getting drafted, and he has made the most of it. And that is Jordan Dume. He is the QMJHL Player of the Week. 6 goals, 2 assists in 3 games, including a 4-goal effort against the Acme Bathurst Titan on Sunday afternoon. Jamie, everyone that I talked to, whether it's in Halifax, I've talked to a couple of people involved in the Columbus organization. They say the exact same thing. This guy just knows where the puck is. He knows where the puck's going to be. And if he doesn't have it, he knows how to get it. He is the king of turnovers in Halifax right now, forcing them and really driving the offense. He was third in the league scoring last year. He's going to be right up there again this year if all things stay equal.
Yeah, definitely one of the most dangerous offensive players in the league for sure. And, you know, putting up crazy numbers in his draft year, 109 points last year. Like, that's really, really impressive. And I don't know if you've had a chance to look at his elite prospects page, but he's on pace right now for 68 goals and 166 points this season.
Is that good?
I say he does it. I think he's going to hit it. Like, that is really good. And, like, I almost feel like we're still underrating him a little bit. Like, I feel like we're not really valuing him as much as we should, which is crazy to say.
Well, I remember when he came into the league at 16, of course, been watching him here ever since. He came in with not a lot of fanfare. He was one of two first round picks of the Mooseheads that year. Marcus Vidacek was the other one. Marcus Vidacek was the higher pick as well. And Vidacek maybe got a little bit more of the attention, but at the same time, the Mooseheads were also bringing in Zachary Leroux, who is still with Moosehead, but currently injured until probably at least December, and Elliot Denoyer, who has since graduated from the Q. So between Denoyer and Leroux, and to a lesser extent Vidacek, it kind of allowed Dume to kind of slide under the radar, but at times that first year, he was on the first line.
Yeah.
And he's made the most of all of the opportunities that's been handed to him. And here we are 2 years later, he's leading this team. And you're right, Jamie, he maybe isn't getting the same notoriety in Halifax he is, but at the same time, you know, he's kind of getting it knowing that, you know, a guy like Zach LaRue is not in the lineup. You know, he's really being forced upon to drive the offense even a little bit more than he normally would. Mm-hmm. And it's like water off a duck's back with him. He's just, he just rolls with it and he produces. And, you know, if that's the least you can say about a player, then you've got yourself an excellent player on your hands.
Yeah. And, you know, you just listed off a lot of those guys. I mean, this is a really good core that the Mooseheads have built here. And I think obviously when you're trading a guy like Bobby Orr, away, I mean, that kind of signals that you have a really good offensive core. So really interesting year in Halifax. I think most of us expect them to kind of win the division, not necessarily easily, but I think we kind of expect them to be a little bit of step above the rest of the teams, the Maritimes. I'm curious to see how they perform this season. I think next year is probably their big year, and Dume is going to be a huge piece of that.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the players of the week, or the player of the week, one of the players on the team of the week in the QMJHL. He's joined up front with Tommy Cormier in Victoriaville. Another huge breakout year there with the undersized forward who Victoriaville basically picked up for a song. And he's been lights out for a surprising Victo team. James Malatesta in Quebec, of course, is the other forward, another one of those guys with the infinite forward depth that the Ramparts have. He's a big part of that. Cale McCollum in Val-d'Or, and Tyson Hinz, who we briefly touched upon last week, the Anaheim Ducks prospect playing in Shawinigan. Those are your two defensemen of the team of the week. And in goal, another guy who has had a very hot start, William Russo, once again, the Quebec Rampart. And speaking of the Rampart, one of four teams mentioned in the top 10 rankings in the CHL, those came out today. The Ramparts are second. The Sherbrooke Phoenix are fourth. They dropped down a spot. Halifax Mooseheads, who were an honorable mention, are now in 10th. And Gatineau, who were in the top 10, fall into the honorable mention category. So the Q is still very well represented on the national stage. And a lot of those teams show up in our key matchups of the week as well, Jamie. On Wednesday, for example, those Mooseheads, they're on their first Quebec trip of the year. You mentioned how they're expected to be a top team in the Maritimes. Well, let's see how they do against that very strong Western Conference.
Yeah.
They're going to get their first crack at them on Wednesday night in Blainville, and they play the Armada. Thursday night, Valdor and Rouyn Noranda. That's the first of a back-to-back home-and-home Thursday and Sunday. The Battle of 117, I believe they call it up there. So always good. And with both teams, a little bit surprisingly good, maybe a little bit unexpected, should be good. And, of course, Gatineau in Moncton on Friday night. What are you looking forward to in the upcoming week in the QG?
Well, the Valdor-Rouyn series will be interesting because, like you said, I mean, I think they're kind of on a little bit of an even footing so far. And I think anytime you got two rivals that are kind of in the same level of caliber, you're going to get some good games. So hopefully that's a good series, and that rivalry can kind of be reignited this season. Also curious to keep an eye on Gatineau and that Maritime road trip. I think that game Friday against Moncton, that'll be an interesting matchup. Looking forward to watching that.
Yeah, now we're seeing a lot more guys or a lot more teams start to cross over from one conference to the other. The West has already played the East quite a bit. Now we get to see the East, some of the top teams in the East face off against their counterparts out West. Should be interesting. We can't wait to see not only what happens, but we can't wait to tell you all about it next week when we are back once again. This has been another episode of Hockey News on the Q. For Jamie Tozer, I'm Will McLaren. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.